You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Millions of Americans are out of work and nervous about the future. Coming up, we'll look at what we can do to better manage our finances and deal with the stress that comes with the coronavirus pandemic. Now, since the start of the COVID-19 outbreak, Wisconsin has already held a presidential primary and a special election for the 7th Congressional District. Those proceeded despite Governor Evers' safer-at-home orders and a lot of mixed views on whether they should have been postponed. Some state lawmakers are thinking ahead now to future elections and keeping them safe and fair for voters during public health emergencies. State Representatives Joel Kitchens and Stosh Grzynski announced a bill today on the topic, co-authored by Republican State Senator Kathy Bernier from Chippewa Falls. Joel Kitchens is a Republican representing the 1st Assembly District, including Sturgeon Bay. Representative Kitchens, welcome to Central Time. Oop, do we have Representative Kitchens? Well, we'll see Representative Stosh Grzynski with us, Democrat representing the 90th Assembly District. Representative Grzynski, hi.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, waiting to get a thumbs up on Representative Kitchens. Are you there?
Hello.
Oh, thanks. Glad you could join us. Well, let's start with you, Representative Kitchens.
Sure.
Talk about this legislation. What would change in the way we do elections here in Wisconsin?
Well, I think that, you know, first off, the purpose of it is to keep voters safe, to make sure that everyone that wants to vote can vote, and then also at the same time still protect election integrity so we can have confidence that the results really do reflect the will of the people, I guess. There are a number of points to it. We're primarily making it very easy for people to vote by mail, but we're also still allowing in-person voting. So we will send an application for an absentee ballot to every voter. They will still need voter ID, but the Elections Commission would have the opportunity to waive the signature requirement, the witness signature. There are a number of other provisions. One of the problems in the last election was that our clerks were overwhelmed. They were just swamped. Normally we have 6% absentee ballots and had 75 in the last election. So we would provide funding for them to hire more people. We would have a plan, and each municipality would have a plan in place for the election, how many polling sites, how many people are going to work there, and they would work with the Elections Commission to develop that. Our elections are run by local municipalities, so in the last election, in a couple of instances, they didn't have adequate polling places, and we want to make sure that that is not repeated. So those are kind of some of the main parts of it.
And Representative Grzynski, can you talk about what would happen if this were passed right away as opposed to, we're mid-election time and we're trying to figure out what to do in the midst of a pandemic?
Yeah, thanks for the question. Thanks for having me on today. I would say what we're trying to do with this bill is to make sure the Wisconsin Elections Commission and our local clerks have the tools they need to succeed moving forward, especially during a pandemic. This emergency legislation was written in a way to make sure that they can move forward with better ballot tracking, to make sure that they have the resources at the local level to process this big increase of absentee ballots like Representative Kitchens was just talking about. We could see twice as many absentee ballots easily in this next presidential election. So that's more work for our local clerks, that's more processing, that's more administration. Also, we want to make the process easier for people. So we want to make sure that we get those absentee ballot requests out to application requests out to everyone statewide if they're registered. We want to make sure that folks can also have very clear, concise way of getting that absentee ballot. So making sure that there's a public awareness campaign that's being funded by the Wisconsin Election Commission around absentee ballots. And then also give the Wisconsin Election Commission some tools around flexibility if they need more time to process absentee ballots, if clerks need more time, or if they need to move that deadline as well. So this bill and the heart of it is really trying to make sure that both our clerks and the Wisconsin Elections Commission can move forward with an election that is safe. It's something that everybody wants to participate in. And we really try to cut down on some of the frustration and confusion and anxiety that we had in April.
Talking to State Representative Stosh Grzynski and Joel Kitchens about a bipartisan piece of legislation aimed at helping Wisconsin elections work through potential future disease outbreaks. Representative Kitchens, one concern was that, we had this influx of absentee ballot requests, and we ended up having some of the ballots get caught up somewhere in the postal system. I know that's under federal authority, but is that a part of your legislation trying to figure out what went wrong there?
Yeah, and I think it was mentioned the tracking system that we would ask that they implement. Colorado has something like that where there's a barcode on the ballot, so people can go online at any time and see where their ballot is. So, yeah, there were lots of ballots that either didn't arrive on time or didn't get back to people on time. So, we can't have that in this coming election, especially with the high stakes where Wisconsin is expected to be, really the battleground, one of the battleground states for the presidential election. And we can't have this happen again where there are ballots that are not counted. So that's certainly part of it. And I think if we have that extra help for the clerks as well, they'll be able to get them out in a timely manner. Because in the last election, they were just overwhelmed, and they didn't get them out as quickly in some cases as they should have.
And Representative Grzynski, what did you hear from the Wisconsin Elections Commission as you tried to draft this bill? Did they think this kind of stuff that you're talking about is doable?
Yeah, absolutely. So we drafted this bill with Senator Bernier, Kathy Bernier as well, in consultation with the Wisconsin Elections Commission. They had already been talking about doing a few of these things already. They have some federal funds that are coming into Wisconsin during this cycle. And, we want to make sure that we're leveraging those to the best of our ability to make sure that we're running smooth, fair, and transparent elections here, and really trying to address what we believe is going to be a very big increase in absentee ballots. But the Wisconsin Election Commission was part of the process as we move forward, and we look forward to having other legislators co-sponsor this and really trying to push this through to make it a reality.
Representative Kitchens, I know whenever we talk about any kind of changes to elections in Wisconsin or around the country, there's always a concern from one side or another. Wait, is this going to help them more than it's going to help us? Can you talk about the importance of trying to do this in a bipartisan way?
Yeah, we really focused on the areas where we can agree, and you're absolutely right that's unfortunately the normal reaction of politicians. I think we did a pretty good job of this. We talked to a lot of people in working through this. The part about the signatures, I know that that's a big deal to the Democrats, but for the Republicans, we want to hold on to requiring voter ID. So I think that's a good compromise that I hope people can get behind. But you're right, elections are always difficult. It's always tough to keep the partisanship out of it.
And Representative Grzynski, you mentioned you're looking for more support. Do you think, again, with bipartisan sponsors, this is something that both parties can come up with, something close to what you're talking about now, and pass it in time to where it makes a difference in this year's election?
I would hope so. I mean, I think that's the aim of the legislation, to try to move it forward. This bill, I believe, really focuses on finding common ground out there and focuses on bipartisan support. So like Representative Kitchens had mentioned, we talked quite a bit when we started moving this forward. We got outside stakeholders to weigh in on the bill, and we really wanted to make sure we could do this in a way where we really tried to address some of the challenges that are on the ground right now. And I think we could talk for a long time and sit and argue about the things we don't agree on, but we really tried to focus in on the things that we thought were really important for us to move forward. And that included really making sure our clerks had the support they need moving forward, giving the Wisconsin Election Commission more tools as they move forward in this process, and making sure that voters feel very comfortable moving forward in August and November.
We'll watch for the progress on this. Thanks to both of you for joining us today.
You bet.
Yeah, thank you.
We've been talking to State Representative Joel Kitchens of Sturgeon Bay and Representative Stosh Grzynski of Green Bay, Republican and Democrat respectively. Talk to them today about a new bill they've co-authored to make elections safer during a state of emergency. Coming up, even when the world shuts down, young kids still continue to lose their baby teeth. We'll talk about why the tooth fairy is an essential worker for kids at this time. That's coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, is the tooth fairy an essential worker? Kids have been asking that question, and a folklore expert tells us why it's worth taking children's concerns seriously. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a look at zoo animals.
The coronavirus pandemic has truly touched every aspect of Wisconsin life. On beautiful spring days, zoos would normally be crowded with visitors. Although they're quiet now, staff say the animals will be ready whenever Wisconsinites can return. In the meantime, WPR's Megan Hart tells us zoos are hoping to bring a bit of joy to people however they can.
That's the sound of my morning commute from the bedroom to the kitchen. No, I'm not quarantining at a South African lodge, but I have gotten in the habit of starting my day by live streaming a safari.
He's gonna lead us right to the pride.
I'm actually on my own in Green Bay. I've been spending lots of time searching for birds on the trails near my apartment. And like so many others, I've been enjoying viral videos of animals like the wild goats that went marauding through an empty English village. I think we've seen in recent weeks that animals can bring lots of joy to people during times of uncertainty. And despite the stay-at-home order, Wisconsin zoos are doing their part to keep us entertained. Angela Kosky manages social media for the new zoo in Suamico. She says followers have particularly connected with the zoo's black-footed ferrets during this time of self-isolation.
There's this thing called dead ferret sleep, which is actually a real thing. You can Google it. Basically, when they fall asleep, like, they sleep hard. They fall asleep wherever they are. So our ferrets have this habit of, like, folding themselves in super odd angles and just passing out.
I can see why that tracks with people stuck inside. Kosky says the new zoo's aim is to put humans in touch with animals, whether in person or online.
Our hope is that by teaching people a little bit about them, getting people to, you know, appreciate them or feel connected with them, ultimately that, you know, helps them want to make a difference.
A few weeks ago, the zoo shared a photo of a sign someone had posted outside, thanking the keepers, who are considered essential workers. Kosky says the animals are still receiving top-notch care, but it's not an easy time for zoos around the state. If the new zoo is closed for a couple months during peak season, it could lose half its revenue for the year.
We were on track for probably the best first quarter we've had in years as far as attendance and revenue, and that evaporated very quickly.
That's Chuck Wickenhauser, director of the Milwaukee County Zoo. He hopes the zoo will soon reopen in some capacity as stay-at-home restrictions ease. But in the meantime, fans can still see what's going on with their favorite animals on social media.
Come on in. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Milwaukee County Zoo. I'm Joe.
Don Fleischhaus cares for the zoo's North American animals.
We have four seals, a polar bear, four grizzly bears, a brown bear, five elk, three caribou, two swans, two cranes, two prairie dogs, a badger, and a moose.
She says keepers are still feeding, weighing, and cleaning up after the animals as normal, just without some of the extra meetings.
Basically, we just are focusing on our animals, which is kind of nice.
Lots of the animals Fleischhaus works with have recently come out of hibernation, so they haven't necessarily noticed that things aren't quite normal these days. The polar bear is an exception.
She gets access to all of her holding areas, and she can go in the dens or the back or the exhibit, wherever she wants to go, and she seems a little bit confused.
Fleischhaus and Wickenhausen say the great apes, otters, and a trumpeter swan with an affinity for humans also seem to have figured out something is up. But not all zoos are empty of guests. Shalom Wildlife Zoo in West Bend operates more like a safari park than a traditional zoo. It usually closes from New Year's Day to late April, but it reopened early this year in response to the coronavirus shutdown. Owner David Fechter says it wasn't even his idea.
We started receiving hundreds of phone calls and emails asking us if, you know, people were needing a mental break. People were begging us if we could open up the drive-thru.
On weekends, the line to drive through the zoo has been more than an hour long. Fechter says he knows this is a difficult time for many people, but he also sees a silver lining.
It's just such a wonderful thing, you know, how the families are tuning back into each other and tuning into nature. And, you know, how can you go wrong there?
WPR's Megan Hart brought us that story. She's a reporter based in Green Bay. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowland Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, recently appeared on Will Smith's Snapchat show, Will From Home, to answer some children's questions. A kid named Eva wanted to know if the Tooth Fairy would still come even with the coronavirus around and was worried about the Tooth Fairy catching the coronavirus. Here's what Dr. Fauci had to say.
I got to tell you, Eva, I don't think you need to worry about the tooth fairy. So when you get your tooth fall out, you stick it under the pillow, and I'll guarantee you that that tooth fairy is not going to get infected and is not going to get sick.
While the tooth fairy may not seem like a main character in the big picture scenario, our next guest says the tooth fairy should be considered an essential worker in a child's world, and the tradition has a long history. Brandon Barker is an assistant professor of folklore and affiliate faculty in cognitive science at Indiana University Bloomington. He specializes in American folklore, especially in the southern states and children's folklore. He wrote the book Folk Illusions, Children, Folklore, and Sciences of Perception, and he wrote a piece, The Tooth Fairy as an Essential Worker in a Child's World of Wonder, for the conversation. Brandon, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. Yeah, really happy to be here.
Well, losing a tooth, it's an important milestone for kids, and the Tooth Fairy makes it more magical to a child. Why is the Tooth Fairy so important for kids?
Well, I think the Tooth Fairy really helps kids come to understand themselves in the context of, you know, the expressive world, the culture in which kids grow up. So we have this phrase that we use in the Folk Illusions book, which is we hear about language acquisition a lot. And we know that kids are acquiring their language by the age of five. They've got their grammar and they can speak the language correctly, properly. We're also they're acquiring their understanding of their own bodies. So starting at about the age of four until about the age of 12, kids lose, they shed their deciduous teeth, and they'll be replaced, of course, with adult teeth. But what exactly that biological process means is relegated by the culture in which they come up. And in the instance of the American, you know, tooth fairy, kids get to have a magical moment with their parents, with their caretakers, when they take the tooth, which is, of course, been shed and hide it under the pillow, and a magical creature akin to Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny shows up overnight and replaces their hard work in creating a tooth that they've lost with a bit of money.
You mentioned the American Tooth Fairy. Now, not every culture has the Tooth Fairy, but a lot of different cultures have their own rituals surrounding those lost baby teeth. Can you share a couple of those with us?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, as a matter of fact, deciduous tooth loss and the shedding of teeth is associated with rites of passage or customs across cultures, and it has been for many centuries. Throughout Oceania, Asia, Europe, kids in different places might take the tooth, and if it's a tooth from the bottom of the mouth, they'll throw it on the roof and ask the powers that be to bring them a stronger tooth in replacement. In Europe, Spanish-speaking cultures, in France, the tooth is hidden sometimes on the floor, sometimes under the pillow, and kids will ask a magical mouse to come in and replace their tooth for them. The idea being, from the context of folklore, that some kind of sympathetic magic. You see, mice and rats, their teeth constantly grow, and they're always strong. So maybe the kid's second tooth, their adult tooth, will be strong just like the rat's tooth.
Now, there's a strain in American culture that prizes rationality, and some people might think, well, wait, am I lying to my kids by talking about, you know, something that seems supernatural? Is it okay to just let it go and have that moment of magic?
I think absolutely it's okay. And as a matter of fact, it's probably unstoppable. Folklorists say that we study expressive culture, that is, as opposed to instrumental or practical culture. And as a matter of fact, expressive culture is, to my mind, where often we find meaning. Things like happiness and identity are closely associated with the traditions of expressive culture that we grow up in. So I think during these times, when everything practical and instrumental is being challenged by the situation with COVID-19, the fact that we're still able to celebrate in the expressive cultures that come to us with our use is hugely important and will make them continue to feel safe and, well, happy.
I know the Tooth Fairy can take different forms even in different households. And I know I just saw a letter from my niece to the Tooth Fairy asking, hey, can I keep the tooth when you're done with it? Is it fun that a lot of us invent our own traditions related to a figure like the Tooth Fairy?
Yeah, it's sort of a misnomer that tradition is stagnant. Or tradition comes to us and it doesn't change. As a matter of fact, contemporary theories of what folklore is, dating from about the 1960s, say to us that folklore isn't folklore, or traditions aren't traditions, unless they are constantly being updated and maintained, changed and tweaked for current purposes. A really good example is if tradition tells us that the tooth fairy takes the tooth, but the night of, our child has just lost her first tooth, doesn't really want to part with it. Of course, we can tweak the tradition, keep the tooth, maybe compose a letter, or maybe the tooth fairy will leave a letter letting the child know that they've decided to give them the tooth and they can keep it. We're constantly updating traditions in these ways.
And we started with that question from a kid to Dr. Anthony Fauci, and he took it very seriously, I think. Can you talk about the value of, you know, listening for that sign of anxiety in a kid about something like the tooth fairy or other tradition?
Yeah, so I would say that in the adult's mind, certainly in this 21st century American moment, the separation between the instrumental and the expressive is easily recognizable. But we have to recognize that the separation between the expressive and the instrumental is not easily recognizable for children. As a matter of fact, the expressive is just as important, if not more cherished, by the child. And the child has a genuine concern about the practicality of whether or not the tooth fairy will be able to visit them after the tooth is lost. So I think that, you know, if we want to empathize with the child's situation and recognize that expressive and instrumental aren't existing in some kind of division of importance, then absolutely, we want to treat it just as importantly as Dr. Fauci is treating the rest of his concerns surrounding the virus.
Brandon, very interesting. Thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I've been talking to Brandon Barker, assistant professor of folklore and affiliate faculty in cognitive science at Indiana University Bloomington. He joined us to talk about a piece he wrote for The Conversation titled "The Tooth Fairy as an Essential Worker in a Child's World of Wonder." Coming up, we'll get some advice on how to manage our money and financial stress during the COVID-19 pandemic. Our guest is a financial writer here in Wisconsin who says you're not alone if you're facing problems right now. She'll have some advice on how to get a handle as much as we can on our financial situations and hopefully deal with some of the emotional stress that can surround it. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 6 on The Morning Show, Kate Archer-Kent and her guests check out the latest renewable energy projects around Wisconsin. Find out more and share your thoughts tomorrow morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Now, the U.S. Labor Department says about 36.5 million Americans have applied for initial unemployment claims during the coronavirus pandemic. Just under 3 million of those came in the most recent week of reporting. If you've lost your job, been furloughed, or had to shut down your business, you may be losing sleep over your financial future. If you are still working, you might be worried that you could be next. Our next guest says the pandemic and economic downturn are largely out of our control, but we can take control of our negative emotions and, to some extent, our personal finances. Emily Guy Birkin is a personal finance blogger from Wauwatosa and author of several books, including End Financial Stress Now, Immediate Steps You Can Take to Improve Your Financial Outlook. Emily, good to have you back on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I read a bunch on your blog, and one thing that is bugging you about some of the response to this is advice that goes along the lines of, you know, go back in time and save money before this. You don't have a lot of patience for that kind of talk right now, it seems like.
No, there's a vein of financial advice that seems to really focus on the coulda, shoulda, woulda sort of advice, where it's like, oh, well, you would be fine if you had saved money for in an emergency fund. If you had 3 to 6 months worth of savings in an emergency fund, you would be fine right now. And not only is that useless because there's nothing that you can say to that other than, yes, you're right, of course. I mean, that doesn't actually give you any path forward, but it also makes you feel bad because, you know, unless there is a DeLorean nearby that can take you back in time and help you save money yesterday, there's nothing you can do about it. And unfortunately, that's something that you see from a lot of people in the personal finance community is like, well, this is why I say you should save an emergency fund. That's not helpful. What we need to do is deal with things as they are right now and figure out where to go from here. You know, that this there's no point in lamenting over what happened in the past. It's already done. Let's start from where we are and figure out what you can do. And let's just stop with the advice to what you should have saved.
And for someone who is in that situation where their income has dried up and they legitimately don't have the resources to meet all their key expenses, you talk about ways to kind of triage what has to happen, what can I try to put off, how do we start to wrap our heads around that?
So that kind of triage is very, very difficult, and it's very uncomfortable. But the important thing is to start looking at your expenses as which of these will hurt my family if I don't pay them, and which of these are something that I can put off that's, you know, the pain that they will cause will be something like a hit to my credit score, which is not going to take food out of my kids' mouths. It's not going to affect the roof over my head. And so that's where you start with, is start looking at the specific expenses that are the ones that you need to make sure that you keep things coming through. So that means what do you need to do for rent or mortgage? What do you need to do for your groceries? The things that keep home and hearth together as you work your way through this, because you can, when things get back to normal or get back to a new normal, go back to those things that were not going to affect your health and your ability to take care of yourself and your family, and take care of them then.
An important follow-up to that, though, you write, don't just stop paying whatever bill you can't afford to pay. You make a big case for reaching out, letting people, you know, whether it's a credit card company, whatever, letting them know the situation you're in and trying to come up with a plan with them.
Yes, absolutely. Ultimately, creditors, you know, people to whom you owe money, your bank, whoever you're paying your mortgage to, your landlord, what they ultimately want to know is what to expect. That's really what pretty much all of the financial world is about. I mean, that's where all of the, you know, credit scores come from. That's like bargaining, figuring out what people can expect in terms of your repayment schedule and things like that. So it's very easy to feel shame about, like, I don't have money and I can't pay this bill. And a lot of times we kind of turn into ourselves and avoid it because we do feel ashamed. But you're going to have a much better time of it, and your creditors will be much more understanding if you call and try to work something out with them, explain the situation. Now, that's not, you know, an all-purpose panacea. That's not necessarily going to work with everyone. There are mustache twirlers, as I call them, who are going to be like, I don't care. But the majority of people would rather have you call and figure out a way to work something out so they know what to expect than would like you to are just going to tell you, I don't care. Because what's important to them is that they keep their cash flow coming in too, and knowing what to expect allows them to do that.
Talking to Emily Guy-Birkin, personal finance blogger and author based in Wauwatosa. She's joining us with some personal finance advice for people who are feeling the hit in the midst of this pandemic. You can join in with your thoughts, maybe your questions, your own advice at 800-642-1234. Emily, you mentioned that that's a hard call to make because we can view it as a personal failing if we can't pay that bill right now. We have this moral and emotional weight around that. And that even in normal times, that's a big part of what you try to help people with, recognizing that money trouble is real trouble, but separating ourselves from it somehow. How do we navigate that? Oop, Emily, are you there? We're going to reconnect with Emily Guy Birkin in just a moment. In the meantime, I'll invite your calls at 800-642-1234. Has your personal financial life been disrupted in the midst of this pandemic, whether because of a job loss, a furlough, a hit to a business you own? How are you trying to deal with that? Do you need some advice, maybe even just some encouragement? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Emily Guy Birkin is with us, personal finance blogger based here in Wisconsin, author of books including End Financial Stress Now, Immediate Steps You Can Take to Improve Your Financial Outlook. We'll get her back and continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about managing our money and dealing with financial stress during the coronavirus pandemic and all the...
Hey, everybody. I'm Jake Carlisle Larson. I'm a producer here on Central Time. My job is to find the people and the issues around Wisconsin that matter most to you. And honestly, the best way to do that is to ask you directly. So what stories do you want to hear on our show? What people are making a difference in your community? And what concerns do you have in the state or in your county? Tell us the questions you have that no one else is answering. You can send us an email, that's centraltime@wpr.org, or tweet us at centraltimewpr. We want to hear your ideas, and thanks.
I'm with a couple crossed wires there. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Emily Guy Birkin, looking at personal finance amid the coronavirus pandemic. Emily, I was asking before we took a break there, you think a lot about this issue of, okay, we can have real money problems, but we add a lot of emotional weight to it, a lot of mental weight to it. How can we try to separate that out?
Well, something that I think is really important for people to remember is that money doesn't actually exist. And that's something that kind of blows your mind when you start thinking about it. Money only has value because we've all decided collectively that these little green pieces of paper, these little coins, these numbers on a screen have value. And so because of that, we put our own moral and philosophical meanings onto money. And so once you start thinking about it that way, that can kind of help you separate your feelings about money from your decisions about money. And that's something that's important to do to make sure that you are making the decisions that are going to be best for your financial life, which can be very, very tough. I mean, there's no one who's able to be completely rational about money. But once you start thinking like this is a construct that we are all sharing, and so the way that I deal with this construct is not necessarily good or bad, it's just the way that I deal with it. Can I make the way that I deal with this work better for my financial life, for my needs, and for the way that I want to live?
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Cyril is with us in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hello there. I wanted to ask your guest, a lot of our utility bills and a lot of other bills that we pay are often done by direct withdrawal from our accounts, and so we don't see bills and things like that. How do we take care of issues like that when we know our savings and checking and whatever accounts are running dry?
Cyril, thanks for the call. That's something you've tackled, I think, in a recent piece, Emily.
Yes, this is one of the things where under normal circumstances, I'm a big fan of automating your savings. If you're someone who, you know, doesn't enjoy thinking about money, doesn't enjoy paying bills, because there are some of us who actually do enjoy it, automating your savings is a great way to make sure that things are taken care of without you having to pay attention to it. In a situation like what we're facing right now, this is the time where you want to turn off that automation, because if you know that your checking account, your savings account is running dry and you're afraid that the automated payment for, say, like Netflix, which is not a necessity, is going to cut into the money that you would need for groceries or something like that. So that's when I would recommend changing back to manual payments. Now, in most cases, you're not going to be getting paper bills anymore these days, but turning off the automatic payment and signing up for bill reminders each month so that you can do that triage and you can say, you know what, I can't pay this bill this month because I need more money for rent, I need money for groceries, or whatever it is that is most needed. And that can help you have control over what it is that your money is going towards rather than letting it continue to automate.
Thanks again for that call, Cyril, at 800-642-1234. And Emily, that reminds me, you talk about, you know, for those, you know, not quite essentials, the borderline things that we pay for, this might be a time to negotiate what some of those things cost.
Yeah, absolutely. There is more room for negotiation than most of us realize. Negotiation is not a skill that most people enjoy. It's not something that people like to do. And most of us kind of feel overwhelmed when we have to call and speak to our cable provider or something like that. But this is an excellent time to learn how to do that. And my suggestion is for things that are, you know, not necessarily necessities now, like cable and internet actually is kind of a necessity these days, particularly if you're working from home. But if you're choosing between cable and internet and groceries, then you're in a really tough spot. So the thing to do would be find out what their lowest going rate is. Do some research into what other providers are offering. Call and speak to someone and, if necessary, ask to talk to the retention department. And use all of those things. And above all, be very polite and calm, because folks on call centers are used to getting very angry callers. And so they're much more likely to help someone who is being kind to them. And use those negotiation skills. The worst that happens is that they say no, and you're in the same position you were before you made the phone call. But you may be able to see some savings that could range from modest to impressive. And every little bit helps when you're in a situation like we're in right now.
We're talking to Emily Guy Birkin, personal finance writer from Wauwatosa. Her books include End Financial Stress Now, Immediate Steps You Can Take to Improve Your Financial Outlook. She's sharing some advice specific to this time of the coronavirus pandemic and the economic hits, the financial hits that so many people are taking right now. Emily, you also write that this is a good time to do some personal finance spring cleaning, maybe when we're spending more time at home one way or another. What kind of things can we start to look at?
So for the kind of spring cleaning, there's a number of things really helpful to do. For instance, something that I personally have put off for years is actually doing an inventory of everything in my home in case I need to make some sort of insurance claim on my home. One of the things that is consistently recommended and required is to take a video of everything in your home. So if, heaven forbid, there were a fire or a flood, or you needed to make some sort of home claim for the things in your home, you would be able to name what it was that you had, because otherwise, if you just try to sit down and write down everything you own, you're not going to remember everything. And so that's something particularly, you know, with what we're dealing with right now, you know, you have the time. We all have pocket video cameras. And so that's something you can do a little bit every day to kind of help yourself in case of an emergency in the future. You can also do some things like look over all of your bank accounts and see if there are any zombie charges, which are those recurring subscription charges that you don't want and don't use. so much of the world is done via subscription these days. So everything from streaming entertainment to getting style boxes every month. And sometimes you'll sign up for a subscription and it's, you know, sign up for 30-day trial and forget to cancel it. And it just keeps recurring each month and you just don't even remember it until you go and look and call and cancel that. That's a very easy way to find a little extra money in your budget. Another thing I recommend people doing is freezing your credit right now, particularly during this current crisis. So you can freeze your credit so that no one, not even you, can open new credit in your name. And if you do need to open new credit, then you can what's called a thaw to unfreeze it momentarily and then freeze it again when you need to open a new line of credit. When there are major world events, major natural disasters, there are always scammers and fraudsters who are out there trying to make a quick buck. And trying to steal your identity is constantly something we need to worry about. And so if you freeze your credit right now, you've got the time, it'll only take a few minutes, you will know for sure that no one is going to be living large on your credit.
You also make the case that this is a good time to think about reaching out to representatives, state representatives, people in Congress. What kind of things might we keep in mind or want to reach out to them for?
So this is something that I've been thinking about since I had a friend reach out to me, talking to me. She's not in Wisconsin. She's in North Carolina, but she filed for unemployment on March 30th. And she was told that it would be 20 weeks before she got any money. I was thinking, like, this is the sort of thing that one individual is going to have a really hard time doing anything about. But our representatives are the people who can do something about it. And, you know, if you think through what it is people want most, our representatives, they want their constituents to be happy or at least not calling them every day. So with anything that's going on where you're being impacted because there is such a logjam in unemployment benefits or there is a problem, if every time you have to make a phone call for, you know, trying to get the PPP, if you've got a small business, a PPP loan, if every time you are unable to get through, you also make a phone call to your representative, it will make it clear over time how big a problem this is so that the people who do have some power can actually work on our behalf. And the more we all do that, and again, people are more likely to have a little extra time to make a phone call these days, for those who are not working in essential businesses, that can be a way to help make sure that the people who are advocating for us are advocating for what we really need.
When people are facing tough financial times or just worried about the uncertainty and what the future can hold, what are some ways we can make sure we enjoy life without, you know, throwing a lot of cash into that enjoyment in the first place?
Well, that's always one of those tough questions. Like, what are the ways that you slow down and enjoy life at life's pace without feeling like you need to keep up with the Joneses? In some ways, it's a little easier right now because no one's flying to Thailand, no one's going to Bali right now. But it's all about taking the time to really think through what is it that you enjoy in each day? What is it that brings you happiness in each day? I have a project that I do called One Good Thing, where every day I record the one good thing that happened that day. Often there's more than one. And taking the time to do that has helped me to not only recognize the little joys that are in my life, but also seek them out and embrace them and do more of the things that I enjoy because I noticed how much joy I got out of them when I noticed that it was my one good thing that day.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Emily, a big message, I think, here for people dealing with financial stress right now. They're not alone. A quick bit of encouragement for people, if you can share that.
One thing, it's become cliche to say we're all in this together, but we are all in this together. If you were facing a personal financial trauma, it would be a lot harder to find a group of people who could support you. We're all in this together, and so we can support each other. And we are facing this with a caring group of people who all want us to get through this and who are rooting for each other. And that's really a wonderful thing.
Emily, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Emily Guy-Birkin, personal finance blogger from Wauwatosa. She's written a bunch of books, including End Financial Stress Now, Immediate Steps You Can Take to Improve Your Financial Outlook. She's with us to talk about managing our money and our financial stress during the pandemic. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, economist Joseph Stiglitz joins the show. He says the pandemic shows the fragility of the American economy, and he says it highlights unfair advantages held by big businesses. That and more tomorrow on Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. Tomorrow at 8, Wisconsin colleges and universities are facing big challenges in the midst of the pandemic with funding shortfalls and a scramble to bring education online. Get the latest and find out what it means for the future tomorrow at 8 on The Morning Show. Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then concerts aren't happening right now, which means it's a great time to pull out your favorite live albums. We'll talk to a Wisconsin music critic about some of his favorites. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.